Hello, everyone. This is Dr. James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk. And today, we want to talk about marriage. When marital relationships are souring and appear to be dying, there's usually one partner who increasingly wants to get out of the relationship, or at least is no longer interested in preserving it. He or she shows this attitude by being distant, angry, rude, disrespectful, insulting, or downright mean, or absent. You know, they're frequently at the office or doing something else. And the other partner sees this and panics over the possibility of divorce and begins to beg and plead and cry and appease the other person by saying, "I'll do anything, just don't leave me, I can't stand it, I couldn't live without you," and grabs and holds. The desperate partner wants to go to counseling and harangues the other one about going there. Well, he or she may eventually agree to do it, but it's only for pretenses, don't really have their heart into it. What the husband or wife is feeling who is on the disengaged side of things is trapped. Let's say it's he. It can be either one. He feels trapped. He may be looking for a way out. And when he reveals that, that brings more tears and more pleas and what I call grabbing and holding response. I want to tell you that never works in this kind of scenario. In fact, it drives the disengaged partner away. It usually kills what's left of the marriage if it doesn't correct itself. Now, get this. I will call the second spouse a victim, even though everybody knows there are two sides to a conflict. But there's one who wants to hold it together and one who wants to end it. But the way the rejected spouse responds in that period holds the key to the survival or the death of a marriage. If you never heard that before, you're hearing it now. Not knowing what to do when you see you're losing somebody that you love desperately, and you will do anything to make the marriage survive. How you react in that situation will determine largely, not always, but largely, whether or not you make it or don't. And this is what I've written about in Love Must Be Tough. And I don't mean to be self-serving about it, but I want to tell you that it's resulted in hundreds of marriages with whom I have worked where the relationship survived and rebuilt what had been lost. Now, I've invited a guest to be with us today who has been through this terrible struggle, and she's agreed to talk about it today. Her name is Tracy Russell, and I'll tell you at the top that her marriage has survived. Her husband is here in the control room with us today. He's listening. He has approved what we're going to talk about today. And he's a great guy. His name is Mark. And we may even talk to him before we're through. Tracy, thank you for being here today and being willing to open yourself and talking about what has been a struggle, especially in the early days, right?
Yes. Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Dobson. And I honestly want to tell you from the bottom of my heart, it is such an honor to meet you and to be here and to see your smiling face. Oh. So thank you for having me.
I understand that you've read a number of my books and we've sort of been friends, although I only met you today.
That's right. And I feel like I represent hundreds of thousands of women that just want to thank you for helping us raise our families, from Odyssey to the books you've written to Strong Willed Child. There are just hundreds of us that I represent that want to say thank you and that we're all here in your studio and you've been with us all the way. So,
well, I'm here to lift your spirits, but you just had lifted mine. So let's get to it. Tell me how you met Mark. I understand that it started at church, right?
It did. We actually went to the same church in Miami, Florida. We both grew up in sunny Miami, Florida, and we went to a Presbyterian church. We met in youth group, and yes, that was where it all started. And we had
I read that you said you saw forever in his eyes.
I did. Well, I did marry the cutest windsurfer on the beach, I will say, and I looked in those crystal blue eyes and I saw forever. And so I was just so excited to get married. Our families had gone to the same church. And so it was really a joy.
How long did you go together?
We had a short, brief dating in high school, which I won't get into the details of that one. I say that we had to make each other wait a few years. But after college, we got back together. And so we dated about a year and a half and got married.
So you had time to know what you were dealing with.
Yes, I did. And so we were really excited and just thought this was the boy that I saw on the beach that I never wanted to leave.
Tell me about the wedding.
So the wedding was beautiful. It was on Key Biscayne, Florida.
You brought me pictures of it.
I did. It was overlooking a beautiful ocean. And so really it was our hometown and it was a beautiful 250 guests. And it was just the most beautiful moment of my life was marrying him.
And after the marriage, you were riding in a car. Tell us
Correct.
What happened.
Well, unexpectedly to me, as we said goodbye and the rice was flying in the air, we got in the car to leave and I'm shaking the rice out of my veil and looking over at Mark. And suddenly I saw a look on his face I had never seen before. And in your book, you say that trouble with a marriage can start on the first day of a marriage, on the honeymoon, or it can start 50 years therein. Mm-hmm. And I had the unfortunate pleasure of that starting on the first moments of our
marriage.
What a
shock. You just had this marvelous, beautiful wedding to the man that you're deeply in love with and have devoted your life to. And immediately thereafter, you're beginning to see that there was something different going on.
Yes, I saw something cloud over his face. I can't describe it even to this day, but it just kind of looked like a darkness. And on the night we drove to our honeymoon night, the night that was supposed to draw us the closest, there was a very cold distance between us. And so the next morning we woke up and we were so excited we were going to go on our honeymoon cruise. And again, I just felt this growing distance. And I thought, I'm just going to put that behind me because there was so much to look forward to. And I had people calling me Mrs. Russell for the first time in my life. And I just couldn't wait to be a wife. And so we boarded the cruise and I'm unpacking all the beautiful things that I had. And I finally worked up the nerve to look over and say, Mark, what's wrong? And at that point, he looked at me and said, I don't think we should have been married.
What a shock.
It was a shock of a lifetime.
What in the world did you do? Did you cry?
I cried and I felt like someone had punched me in the gut. And I think I just started saying, why did you marry me? Why did you do this? I could have changed all this as of yesterday. And I think I just started screaming and I ran out of the room and I ran out on the edge of the ship. But the ship had left the dock and I couldn't get off that boat. And I knew I was headed into not only the ocean, but just an ocean of pain and uncertainty. And it was a really challenging moment.
You've now lived with Mark for many years. What do you think he was thinking at that moment? What caused this? How do you go from a wedding to that complete disenchantment?
I think there's a time some people go through a complete crisis of belief and an identity crisis where God is going to bring them to the end of themselves. And unfortunately, I know the Lord did that in my life. He brought me to the end of myself after a series of decisions that I had made. And I think this was the time that God was going to absolutely bring Mark to the end of himself and bring him into a wholehearted relationship with himself. But I think at this point, he had been enough of a nice guy where some of the issues that needed to get dealt with were all coming to the surface. And I think the marriage caused them to kind of bring it all
up. So the honeymoon was a disaster.
The honeymoon was a disaster.
It often is.
And as I went back in the room that night, I remember just hiding in the bathroom because I didn't even want to stay in the room. And I looked in the mirror, and just the day before, I had looked in the mirror and saw the beautiful white veil, and I had seen this beautiful smiling face. And then when I looked in that mirror, I saw the black mascara running down my face, and I felt like I had aged I felt like an old woman I was staring at that I didn't even recognize. And I knew, oh my goodness, I have nowhere to go. I've got to make this work. Mm. And so the first stop on the cruise, I ran and found a payphone. I know I'm dating myself with that comment, but I found a payphone and I called home to my mom and I said, Mom, I think I'm in trouble. And she said, no, it's okay. These are wedding jitters. It's going to be okay. Go have fun. But I couldn't make it fun. And I tried and I put on the happy face like most Christian women try to do. And we want that happy marriage.
But more I knew than anything
more
in
than
life.
Anything in the world. And I wanted the pictures and I wanted the moments of love and connection. But I knew the storm was brewing and I knew it was coming and there was nothing I could do to stop it.
You know, little boys in the early days think about power, about athletics, about all kinds of things. Little girls at that time, 3, 4, 5, are thinking about marriage.
Absolutely.
It's amazing. It's built into the human personality. I don't care if anybody likes that or not, but it's true. A little girl will plan her marriage and think about that for years until it happens. And then when it occurs, to have it blow up.
Right.
Coming from the wedding,
right.
I can't imagine anything more traumatic than that.
It was. It was the moment I had always waited for. And I'll never forget when this was all happening, I ran out on the cruise ship and I just started crying out to God. I was like, why? I trusted you with my whole heart. I don't understand. And I heard a voice in my head that was just so sinister. But I heard, look at what your God has done to you now. Look at this.
You blamed him?
No, it was an evil voice of like, look what's happened to you. You trusted God, and now look what's happened to you. And I just started crying out to God. I was like, God, just please help me. Please be with me. And that was really in that moment when I didn't understand what was happening. I have since learned that the Lord entrusts us as Christian women that love him with really difficult, what I call POWs, plans out of whack or people out of whack. And that was one of them. And he's still
loving
me.
I don't know how to tell you this, but that's life.
Yes, it was. But I didn't realize it at the time. And I thought I had done something wrong or I was being punished. And what I didn't know is God was entrusting me in that moment to trust him with my whole life.
Somehow you got through the honeymoon, then what?
So I did what your book says about you go back and forth between...
You hadn't read it yet.
I hadn't read it, but I remember this part from the book of appeasement and then a panic and appeasement, and I was panicked. So I was going to be the perfect wife. I was going to do all the romantic dinners. I was going to make this marriage work. And I thought, I have to bring him back into this. But unfortunately, I started feeling a little sick about 3 months into marriage. And so I said, Mark, I think we need to go to the doctor. There's something wrong with me. And the doctor came back in with a big smile on his face and said, well, you're not
sick. Welcome to motherhood.
You are going to be a mom. And again, Dr. Dobson, in that moment that I had waited for my whole life, now I'm told, I look over at Mark and I saw that same blank stare. And my heart just started to drop again. And I went from panic to just total feeling of shame in my heart. And I sat in the car with him and he said, I told you I wasn't ready to get married and I'm really not ready to be a dad. And I felt it again. I thought, this is the second tidal wave that's hitting my life.
Did Mark come to you during that period of time and say, Tracy, I can't even interpret my own feelings, but I'm committed myself to you. We're going to work our way through this. You get any encouragement from him at all?
No, it was escape. He was gone all the time. So I would come home on a Friday night. I would come home on a Friday night. He would be gone. I wouldn't know what to do. I would walk around a mall by myself. I would wake up on Saturday morning expecting to plan something fun. He would be gone. And that was what was so hard is that desire to escape, I couldn't reach him. I couldn't reel him in, even to have the conversations I needed to have.
Did you beg and plead?
I begged and pleaded. And I begged and pleaded for him to go meet with a counselor.
There it is.
I begged and pleaded for him to go to church
through with
me. Please come to church. I did everything. I was that panicked woman. I ran to anyone and anything I thought could help me at that time. And I actually even ran at one point after I had realized that he was not into being a father. I called a former boyfriend who was an attorney and I said, I'm in trouble. I don't think I can make this marriage work. And he said, no problem. We'll get you an annulment. It's only been 3 months. will prove the marriage wasn't consummated.
Your mother was giving you different advice.
Yeah. Yeah. But at that point, I realized, oh, my goodness, even that out is gone, because I knew I was pregnant. And I said, I'm so sorry. I cannot go through with that. I'm pregnant. And, you know, for a split second, I heard that same sinister voice in my mind say, hey, you can make this all go away. But I wasn't going to let my unborn child be rejected the way I was feeling rejected. And I wasn't going to lose him. And so I'm so grateful that even though I was going through so much hurt and pain, that I made that choice to keep that beautiful life inside me.
There are very few women that I've met who could withstand the pressures and the sorrow and the disappointment and the grief that you were experiencing. Are you a strong woman? Do you see yourself as strong? How did you survive that, Tracy?
I believe it was by the grace of God, but I will tell you one thing. I do not see myself as a tough, strong woman, but I come from some incredibly godly women. I had a godly mom who was my Sunday school teacher at the age of 3 years old and told me Jesus loves me and held up that picture. And I had a godly grandma who in every moment, and probably in this moment when I was calling her, telling her I was in trouble, she would remind me, we serve a good God, Tracy. We serve a good God. And so I like to believe that I come from a long line of strong women in Jesus. And so
did I read that your mother-in-law was praying for you?
My mother-in-law was praying for me too. And so we both had wonderful, strong families on both sides, which made this even more painful because it didn't make sense. It was nobody's fault. It was just that God was entrusting us with a really difficult situation.
Let's go back now to my introduction and what I tried to say in Love Must Be Tough. What I described there was Mark. I wasn't talking about Mark, but the person that wants out typically feels trapped. I made a mistake. I'm stuck. How can I deal with this? And there's always a possibility of divorce, but that's odious too. And they don't know what to do, and they're angry and upset. Was he going through all this?
He was. And at the time, it just seemed like I felt like the man I loved had died on my wedding day. And I was left with this complete stranger who was avoiding me, who wouldn't talk to me. It was almost like he was a completely different person, and he was consumed. And he appeared different. He looked different. My husband is a very good-looking man.
He is.
But at this time, he looked like a different person to me. He was clouded over. The blue eyes weren't sparkling. And that's all he did, was try to stay away, avoid, avoid, avoid. And it was so painful.
When he would come home from work at night, what happened?
He would go to sleep.
He would sleep.
And so I was left alone. Yes. And so actually, after we found out we were pregnant, I went to a pastor of our church. And Mark, I think he went with me, and he had recommended an in-home separation for the first time. And so Mark was sleeping in different bedrooms. So Mark was sleeping in one room. I was pregnant for the first time, sleeping in the other room, holding my stomach, thinking, I cannot believe this is happening to me. And I would call my mom, and she would talk to me all the way till I would fall asleep at night. And I kept doing that, just reaching out to my parents. But the next time I called them, my dad kind of interrupted the conversation and said, Tracy, you're going to have to learn to stand on your own 2 feet. And I said, what's going on? And my mom said, Tom, don't say it. And I said, what's going on? And my mom said, Tracy, I've got cancer.
Oh.
And so now I'm pregnant. I'm separated in the same room, in the same house from my husband. And my mom, who was my strongest godly support, had cancer. And I think he left for that Saturday to go do whatever. I fell on the ground and I said, God, I cannot take it anymore. And my brother, who's a physician, he drove over. He picked me up, scooped me up, put me in the car, and I drove home. That was my first separation from Mark. Was 5 months into marriage, 2 months pregnant. And I went home to live with my parents for a while.
Well, that makes me admire you even more. Were you tempted to just take off, pack up, and leave?
No, not at that time, because I had a baby, and I kept thinking, well, this baby is going to turn him around, you know. And a few months into it, I found out I was having a son, and then I thought, oh my goodness, a son is going to turn him around. We're going to have this next chance. But
you thought maybe the baby might
maybe the baby will turn this around. Not that I had him. Not that I had the baby for that reason, but yeah. I thought maybe this will turn him around. Then I found out I was having a son. I thought, oh, maybe a son will turn him around. But it was just a really difficult situation, and nothing was really turning him around. And so I thought maybe the day that he sees his son, but the day that my son was born turned into the third mark on my life of just a complete nightmare. So that was not going to turn him around either.
How did you come across Love Must Be Tough?
Well, after Chase was born, I was basically living in the house with a man that didn't want to be married. And I was walking down the street one day with Chase, and out of the blue, I met a man, a friend of mine from college.
Chase is your...
My son, yes. I was walking down the street with my son in a stroller, and I met a guy that I knew in college. And the first thing I launched into was, David Connor, I'm in trouble. I'm in a marriage where my husband doesn't want to be married. I'm in trouble. And he said, oh my goodness, you have to read this book called Love Must Be Tough. I just heard James Dobson on the radio. Go get this book called Love Must Be Tough. And I said, I will. And I said, but if you ever can, reach out to Mark and talk to him for me if you ever see him. I said, but I'm going to get that book right now. So I drove to the Christian bookstore. I bought the book, and I did not put the book down for 24 hours. I even worked out with that book, and I'm going to date myself again. I got on a Stairmaster and read that book. I would not put it down. I read every word you said. And unlike the counselors that had told me to be more and do more and all the crazy things they had told me to do, I finally, through your book, met this godly man named James Dobson who sat me down and said that there was a name to the problem, and it was called disrespect, and that I deserved respect, and that I could make choices. And I loved the first part of the book because it said, this is written to the victims. And I knew that was me, that you were writing that book just for me. But I also learned that I didn't have to be a victim, that I could make choices and I could make decisions that could have the power to possibly turn this marriage around. I just needed to be tough. And so I wrote the letter you told me to write that night and did not stop.
The exact letter.
I wrote it exactly. I can tell you exactly what I said. And, you know, the next night when Mark came home, I just simply looked him straight in the face and said, I will always love you. I will always honor our marriage vows. And I so desire to love you. But if you do not want to be married, then you will need to go.
Tracy, you have given such a beautiful explanation of the typical path that people walk when going through a struggle like this. There are no ways to describe it. The wounds are so deep and the hurt is so compelling that people are casting about for anything that will help. Thankfully, somebody gave you this book. I'm not given to bragging on my own books. I mean, I don't do that. This is a book that should be read by everybody who has a marital problem. And in fact, it relates to all human relationships, parents and teenagers, bosses and employees. It has application even internationally. You know, what Neville Chamberlain did at the beginning of World War II was fly off to meet with Hitler and gave him everything he wanted. It was appeasement. It led directly to war. Now, failure to understand this principle leads to war. Now, we're out of time, Tracy, but there's so much more to your story, and I know people are hanging on every word. What I'd like to do is to have you on another program, and we're going to start by your reading the letter that I suggested you write, and you took it virtually word for word. I'm going to ask you to read it because it's in the book, but you used it.
Okay.
And Tracy, thank you for being here.
Thank you so
and
much.
And Mark in the other room, thank you for allowing us to tell this story. We'll close out today, and we'll pick it up right here next time.
Well, what a powerful story of a marriage that endured extreme adversity. You've been listening to Dr. Dobson's enlightening interview with author and speaker Tracy Russell here on Family Talk. Visit today's broadcast page for more information on how she's using her testimony to help others. DrJamesDobson.org is where you'll go, and then click on the broadcast icon. Well, we've run out of time for this program, but be sure to join us on the next edition, and you'll hear the conclusion of Tracy Russell's story. She'll continue explaining the way she used the book Love Must Be Tough to save and reconcile her marriage. It's truly an uplifting account that you won't want to miss, and it's coming your way on the next edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks for listening.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
Does your marriage feel disconnected? Are you wanting more one-on-one time with your spouse? This is Roger Marsh for Family Talk, and we have a great resource for you. It's Dr. Dobson's popular work titled Nightlight for Couples. This devotional is full of insightful content for couples to discuss every night before you go to sleep. Now, throughout the book, Dr. Dobson addresses tough marital subjects like finances, communication, intimacy, and more. Rekindle the emotional closeness in your relationship with this helpful resource. Request your copy of Nightlight for Couples by going to drjamesdobson.org or call 877-732-6825.